Hello and welcome back to An Abundance of Not. It is January the 21st. I am Garrett. That's Wade.
Hello, everyone.
And that's Brad.
Hello.
What's up, fellas?
Not much. How about with you?
Where do I start?
It's been a week.
I think I discussed tiling last week. My laying of tile is essentially complete. I get to grout this weekend. Woohoo!
That sounds like fun.
And I ordered a door for our closet that we're building under our stairwell, so I get to work on framing that up this weekend and drywalling, as well as a taekwondo test on Saturday. So I got a busy weekend and only a tiny little bit of it to be fun.
But that's the weekend ahead, not how your last weekend was.
That is true. That is the weekend ahead, not how my last weekend was. Let's see. Last weekend, I had to go to a pool meeting that it turns out I didn't have to go to, but I didn't know that until I was about 2 minutes from the parking lot. So I figured, well, I'm already here, given it was a 40-minute drive. So I stayed for that.
Someone really could have just sent him a text.
Yeah, a text would have been fantastic.
Are they kicking you off the league?
Yep.
No, but I may be taking a leave of absence here in the future. We'll see how that goes. I had to rent a tile saw to do the tile laying previously mentioned. That was Saturday. We did that. Sunday, we watched the Seahawks. Ugly first half. Less ugly second half, clobber up on Green Bay. So we successfully grated some cheese and laid our tile on Monday. I took Monday off, so that was awesome. Speaking of football.
Yes.
How was your experience Sunday?
You know, we definitely enjoyed watching the Seahawks-Packers game.
I see what you did there.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, so apparently our team just decided to not show up.
Well, did you see the reports that came out yesterday, today, about New England reportedly having 11 of their 12 provided footballs under pressure at the end of the game? Versus Indy's 12 balls were rated fine at the end of the game.
Right. You know, that's one of those things that I'm really torn on. I don't think that it had that much of a bearing in the game. You know, if we had ended the game, 7-10, where they only beat us by a field goal, okay, you know what? Maybe we got cheated out of something here.
Sure.
But they so firmly kicked our rear ends and sent us home that I don't think it should be brushed over. If the investigation finds that the Patriots did cheat, I think they should be punished for it. But even the advantage that they got from underinflated balls wouldn't have been.
It just sounds so fun to say, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Underinflated balls.
It was so bad of a beating that, you know. In the grand scheme of things, we still would have lost.
The flip side of that coin, though, is if they're cheating and got caught there, what did they do or didn't do that they didn't get caught on? You know, like,
absolutely.
If you cheated up to that point, which is interesting to me because the refs have to touch the ball almost every down.
And they
can't tell what's inflated or underinflated.
They didn't squeeze it.
Be like,
whoa.
That was a little.
So that's
questionable.
That's my biggest question in that whole thought process.
Sure.
But yeah, I did not watch the New England game. What was I doing? After
not
Sunday,
an interest.
I'm pretty much not showing an interest whatsoever. The Seahawks game was over at that point, and that's all I really cared about.
I know.
Yeah, I think Sunday was kind of a mellow day for me. So after the Hawks game, we just kind of took it easy, knowing that I had Monday to make up for lost time.
Cool.
So, yeah, I felt bad
went
for
ice
you.
Skating.
I saw something about that. How'd that go?
Well, the kids did really well.
So what color is your butt?
Okay.
I did not land on my butt at all. I also didn't really let go of the wall, but...
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But hey, I stayed up. That's an improvement.
My daughter has opted for a roller skating birthday party.
That should be fun.
She's big into Doctor Who, and roller skating is kind of a old school type deal. So I think they're going to do kind of a blend of a time travels, Doctor Who hybrid party thing, which could be cute.
Very nice. Do you share her interest?
For Doctor Who? No, I have not. I have not given it the chance yet.
Okay.
Is probably the most honest answer I can give.
Sounds fair.
I'm not sure that I would get into it, but I haven't allowed myself to try either.
Okay.
Wade?
Well, like I said, it's been a week for both of us. As I said... It's
technically been a week for all three of us.
Well, you know what I mean. Jesus.
So... are you alienating me or Brad?
You know what I mean, you jerk.
Carry
just
on.
Want some clarity, that's all. Is that so much to ask?
Yes.
Okay.
Did the first day of training for new position... This Monday? It was relatively so it was easy. But apparently the company that I work for training is... Well, manager's too busy, so we're just going to leave you here and hope you do okay.
That sounds like most companies' training policies, actually.
Trial by fire.
That's exactly it.
But, Garrett, you're gonna know this joke. So, we know of a comedian named Brian Regan. He does the thing of the U2 phrase.
Yes. For those who don't know, Brian Regan is a comedian. He's very clean, so he's fun to listen to around the kids. But he's one of those that takes a topic and beats it to death, but does it in a way that's hilarious the entire time. So if you're not familiar, I recommend him wholeheartedly.
Okay, yeah, and YouTube?
He's got a bunch. There's a bunch of clips on YouTube.
Yeah, you can probably find it.
Awesome.
Yeah. He is one of these ticks called the U2 phrase, where people use...
Not U2, the band.
Yeah.
By the way.
The words U and then 2.
So everyone knows the, you know, hey, have a good day, hey, U2. Well, his whole bit is about using it. Not the most optimal options for a reply.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, after a customer paid for his food... after prepping it, I handed it to him, and I said, as he leaves, he said, have a nice flight, as we always should. He says, you too. I'm like, and apparently I now need to buy a plane ticket.
Didn't realize I was traveling anywhere today, but apparently I am.
But it's fun. I mean, it's that little thing in my head of what's going on. But in better cases, got some editing software. So
we just changed gears from the U2 joke that we were really building up for and kind of fell flat. And now we've moved on to video editing.
Yeah. Well,
what'd you end up settling on?
It's a free software called Movie Maker, Windows Movie Maker. Quick, easy to get into. It's God. I mean, sorry.
Does it do the screen captures itself or?
No.
Is it just editing?
It's just editing. You load a video into it.
Yeah, Wade's using Fraps, though, for his recording, so he's got no issues on the recording side.
Sure.
But Fraps doesn't offer the editing capabilities, so he was having to post essentially raw footage.
Okay.
So
awesome.
The first episode, first video that I have edited will be going up tomorrow. And heck, most of it is just... The parts that I cut out is like looking for a match and me complaining about stuff.
That's fine. There's a lot of guys that I've looked at or watch videos online, and it seems like minimal stuff, like in a game where they have to go to a store to buy a certain item to build or whatever. Mm-hmm. They cut out anything that relates to either going to their inventory or going to the store to buy the items or whatever. They cut out all that mundane stuff. Any loading screens, which I try to do with my videos because who wants to stare at a black screen for 30 seconds? Things like that. And they can really just move things right along.
Oh, yeah.
So little things like that. I mean, it's easy to think, okay, well, it's just this or it's just that, you know, little thing. But they do compound. They do add up.
Oh, yeah. When I turn like an hour 9 video into about 50 minutes, it's like I cut out like 20 minutes there. I was like,
yep.
Wow.
Yep.
But it's kind of fun to see as a YouTuber that does the same game that I do. And now that I have editing capability, it's like, I can do that.
That's awesome.
I feel kind of legit now.
Well, it's amazing how much more professional it feels when you're able to trim away, you know, the crap.
Oh, yeah. And definitely when, like, you can just rewatch the video and go, wait, that's not supposed to be there. Delete. All right. Cool. Go.
Yep. One trick that I stumbled upon, and I don't know why I never realized it before, but after I record something and I want to go back through and scan it to see what I want to remove, is play it back at like 4 times the speed. You don't need to hear it. You don't need to see and perceive every little action. You're just looking for those key spots like loading screens, like store interactions, things like that, that you can, okay, pause, cut that out, okay, continue, and really speed up the process while also not missing anything.
Yep.
So, little tip. Anyway, that was a lot of...
better videos for me. Yay!
That was a lot of personal stuff.
Hey, like I said, it's been a week.
It's been a week.
For the both of us. Just not Brad.
No.
It's only been a day for Brad, but it's been a week for the rest of us. All right. Well,
moving on.
Without any further ado, let's get into some movies. So in the movies this week, we have, looks like 5, maybe 6 movies coming out. The first one is called Mordecai, Mordecai, kind of an interesting name. This is rated R, quite the cast in this though. Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ewan McGregor, Olivia Munn, Jeff Goldblum, and Paul Bettany, to name a few. This is currently not critically rated, so be aware of that. Synopsis is as follows. Juggling angry Russians, the British MI5 and his leggy wife, and international terrorist / art dealer and part-time rogue Mordecai must travel the globe armed only with good looks and special charm in a race to recover a stolen painting rumored to contain the code to a lost bank account filled with Nazi gold.
That is one heck of a resume. Anti-terrorist.
No. International terrorist.
Oh, okay. International terrorist, art dealer, and sometimes rogue.
That's correct.
Only sometimes.
Only sometimes.
When he feels like it.
That's correct. Every other Tuesday.
Right. When the money's right.
Yeah. So, quite the cast in that. I mean, it's nice to see Olivia Munn in something. You know, maybe back mainstream. For those who aren't familiar with her, she did a lot of content on, what was the original channel?
She was in like G4 or like Tech
TV. Yeah, G4. No, it was Attack of the Show.
That was G4. But she was on G4. The G4 show was Attack the
channel,
the show.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So G4, which used to be like is a gaming channel or a kind of a gaming based.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of sold out a little bit.
Well, it's vanished now. Yeah. I think we did talk about it being transforming to the Esquire network, then it didn't. Now I think it's just vanished into obscurity.
Yeah, she left and started getting involved, I don't know, in like a news agency or something like that, and now she's
on
the big screen, so that's cool. Next up is The Boy Next Door, also not critically rated. This is viewer rated R. This stars Jennifer Lopez and Kristen Chenoweth. For those who don't know, she played Glinda the Good in the original Wicked Broadway show. And for those who saw Rio 2, she was the voice of the not-so-poisonous tree frog. There you go. This is a psychological thriller that explores forbidden attraction that goes too far. To expand further on that, the movie essentially showcases Jennifer Lopez as a school teacher who has a little fling with a student that gets a little out of hand. So if that's your thing, great. This is 3 in the list. It looks like we do have 5 here. Strange Magic. I have not seen this on Rotten Tomatoes in, the year or so that we've been looking at movies. A 0% critic rating.
Wow.
Not available, but 0. So I don't know how accurate that is, or if it was supposed to be NA and someone put a 0 in the slot. I don't know.
The new guy.
But some of the reviews from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes were not fond. This is PG. It is a child-friendly movie. A fairy tale musical inspired by Midsummer's Night Dream and popular songs from the past 6 decades help to tell the story of a colorful cast of goblins, elves, fairies, and imps and their hilarious misadventures sparked by the battle for a powerful potion. The trailers look visually awesome. This is a George Lucas film backed by Disney. But some of the reviews paint it as something that tried too hard and didn't deliver much.
So apparently if you want to watch a fairy movie, go watch Ferngully again.
I miss Ferngully. I used to watch that all the time. I love Ferngully. It's great. Okay,
so this is it is definitely not a Pixar film.
No, it was back when animation was actually animated. Okay, number 4, Black Sea. This is a 78% critic rating, viewer rating R, or rather content rating R. This stars Jude Law. We haven't seen him in anything in a while. A suspenseful adventure thriller, a rogue submarine captain who pulls together a misfit crew to go after a sunken treasure rumored to be lost in the depths of the Black Sea. Greed and desperation take control. The increasingly uncertainty of the mission causes crew to turn on each other and have to fight for their own survival. Submarine movie. Treasure movie. Could be interesting.
Could be.
Again, 78%. And finally, movie called Cake. 38% critic rating, content rated R. Yeah. This stars Jennifer Aniston, who plays the role of Claire Simmons, who becomes fascinated by the suicide of a woman in her chronic pain support group. That's it. That's all the synopsis said.
No,
very in depth.
At least, I'm glad it wasn't in depth. I'm tired. It's like here, the entire movie.
Thank you. Now I don't have to go and pay $12 a ticket.
Yeah.
All right. And in the box office for this past week, American Sniper pulls in $89.3 million. I've heard good things. Critics say it's good things. If you haven't seen it yet, I think we should all go see it together. We get old hands. We need popcorn. No?
Okay, that got really creepy.
Number 2 in the box office is The Wedding Ringer. This was the Kevin Hart movie, pulled in $20.6 million. Number 3 is Paddington, pulling in $19 million, and Taken 3 and 4th at $14.7 million. A couple honorable mentions from last week. We have Black Hat, which was the Chris Hemsworth cyber criminal movie. That pulled in $3.9 million. And Still Alice, which we briefly talked about last week, did not have a top 10 revenue. So I'm assuming that to be a limited theatrical release. Either of you have any movie viewing news to share with us?
I haven't seen any.
Negative. Fantastic. On to the news.
Leading the news this week, Microsoft held a Windows conference today. That would be January 21. Showcasing the features, some of the new features in the upcoming Windows 10. Windows 10 is currently in a trial phase. It's expected to be released later this year. One of the big items to come out of the conference today, though, was that Windows 10 will be a free upgrade, asterisk.
Asterisk, yes. I saw the free upgrade in a headline today, and I thought, free upgrade from what?
Yeah, so customers currently running Windows 7, Windows 8, and 8.1 will be eligible for the free upgrade.
Yes.
The catch is that they are going to a Microsoft-controlled version model, where up until now, you bought your computer and it had Windows 7, and you decided if you wanted to put Windows 7 Service Pack 1 on it, and you decided if you wanted to upgrade that to Windows 8. The asterisk to this is, if you decide that you are going to take the free version of Windows 10, that means they will keep it updated for you.
Yeah,
you will no longer get to opt out.
With any and every update they deem necessary.
Correct.
Now, that's kind of the point, Wade, that be scratching your head.
Well, you know, that may not necessarily be a bad thing. Then again, it could be a horrible thing.
I mean, you could have...
Everything that they did with Windows 7 was great. I would have had no problem with just, you know, letting them upgrade it. But then they came out with Windows 8, and I would have been pissed.
You know, I don't see why people really have a problem with Windows 8.
The problem, well, I'll speak for myself and not for everyone. The problem that I have with Windows 8 is the interface was just too clunky. The Windows 8 interface works great with a touchscreen device.
But you can select it to be. You can opt for it to be in a standard desktop format that Wade is primarily in most of the time.
Yep.
I think the big thing is if you're like a programmer or a computer engineer, you don't have the accessibility that you're used to.
I'll give it a little thing where I've tried to like unzip a file that I've downloaded and it's like, well, we have an app that I'm like, no, I can do that with a couple clicks of my mouse. Leave me alone. I'll give you that. But, you know, the interface that you were saying is that I don't use it. You don't like it? Don't use it.
Sure.
You know?
Another big change with Windows 10 is going to be the reintroduction of the Start menu, although in a slightly modified format. It's going to be essentially the tiles of the new Start, of the current Start menu in Windows 8, scaled back down to a reasonable size to actually be a menu, not a takeover your entire screen.
Got it.
That was the interface we were talking about, I think.
Yep.
Correct.
I think the biggest issue with the forced update is that, as we all know with some private or low-budget softwares, is that if one person decides to update something but the other hand doesn't have time to catch up, you may have compatibility issues.
Sure.
I'm talking about when we all played Minecraft and the client would update, but the server system that we would use wasn't as on the ball as maybe they could have been, and then so you had compatibility issues. I could see the same issue with programs if Windows is forcing updates and maybe it causes some more independent programs to not function for a while.
Well, although maybe this is a rethinking for them, where if this is the way they're going to do it, instead of, you know, yearly or every 2 years having a major update, you know, we will no longer look forward to Windows 11 and Windows 12. It will just be small incremental updates, maybe weekly, maybe monthly. You know, in a fairly rapid succession, they tweak small things. And so the difference between Windows 10 that you install tomorrow and the Windows 10 that will be running on your desktop in 3 years would be huge, but because it's been given to you incrementally, you know, the day-to-day differences don't matter.
No, that's a good point. Maybe it's more along the lines of how Mac has been doing it, where they've got the the core structure, and they just expand on aspects as each quote-unquote major update comes.
Why do I see this as like an odd way of DRM, where people who have torn programs?
Clients, yeah.
Yeah, would say, well, even programs, when the forced update occurs and goes, you didn't pay for that. You know, what happens there?
It's an interesting thought.
Sure.
There's no reason why it can't, provided that, you know, companies are affiliated with Microsoft and they have a program that can, you know, go through files and verify if they were legitimately acquired.
You know it's going to go through files. It has to do a check to make sure everything is compatible for the upgrade.
In theory.
So
that's an interesting topic. I mean, that could be expanded upon greatly.
Yeah. Sorry.
The computer engineer gives us nothing.
Speaking of which, didn't they... I saw a commercial for, like, their new VR system with, like, holographic...
Yeah, I didn't put that on the rundown today because I haven't had a chance to look into it. I did see they did a closed room, no cameras, no cell phones allowed, trial with some journalists where they got to try out a new augmented reality virtual headset that would take objects in the real world, like tables, countertop surfaces, and could virtually place objects on them that you could interact with through this headset that looks kind of like ski goggles. It's more Oculus Rift than it is Google Glass.
Yeah, I did see that.
Interestingly, it looks like Samsung has got either a product similar or at least a prototype, because they've got a commercial going on, and it shows someone putting on some sort of more Oculus Rift than Google Glass headset and saying, like, you got to see the whole deal of this commercial is you've got to see this. It's kind of like their next catchphrase, but the kid pulls this thing off. They're like, what's it like? He's like, you've got to see this. So yeah. You got Microsoft working on one, which is a no-brainer to me with the Xbox and everything. You've got Samsung, who's a screen manufacturer, working on one, which again makes a lot of sense.
And from what I saw in the commercial for the Microsoft one, is that actually made annoy some screen manufacturers, because it's, you just put this on and you want to watch Channel 5 and there's a square playing Channel 5 news on it. And I was like, unless Samsung, you know, Samsung's going to have a mighty peeve with that.
In theory. I'm interested to see if it pans out and if it takes, gets any traction.
To the whole screen issue thing, though, I mean, those wearable screens have actually been available for a long time. You've been able to buy them, like, through SkyMall or Brookstone or places like that. So that is not new, just having a screen on your head.
But I think Wade's statement of
his augmented reality part of it.
I think Wade's statement is it looks like the Microsoft version's more of a hologram, less a screen.
That's
the concern is that now it's no longer a screen that plays an image, because that's what was in the SkyMall and the Brookstone and stuff like that. But if it's truly a shift in the technology that creates the image that you see, that's maybe the concern.
It's, if you haven't seen the commercial, if this is what they're promising, it's amazing. It's, you know, people working on a motorbike, and it's, they're holographically having pieces unfinished on the bike. It's quite an amazing commercial. If this is what they're promising, looks fantastic, but I can see some companies having some really big issues with it.
I haven't seen the commercial, so I have to look it up.
Progress.
Yeah, no, agreed. I have to go look at the commercial. I haven't seen it. From one tech giant to another, and speaking of the VR and Google Glass specifically, Google is working on some big changes for their troubled Google Glass and giving a former Apple Inc. executive oversight over the initiative. Unfortunately, the article I found was very limited. It was a Wall Street Journal exclusive from what I could see. But Google is trying to kind of tackle the concept of how they can go from the software industry to the hardware, because so far some of their options hasn't really panned out. I mean, any Google straight phone is only so much of the market because there's a lot of competition. The Google Glass, I think they priced themselves out of the market, not knowing what it costs to make. So they're trying to see where they can get into the hardware world and be successful at it.
I think they should have had more of a buddy system with the other phones.
Well, that's what the Android is from a software standpoint.
Well, you know, not just this works with the, you know, Android-based phones, but all of them.
You mean the Google Glass being more compatible with other phones?
Yes.
I was pretty sure it was based on a Bluetooth connection, but maybe okay. Brad can weigh in on that.
I'm not sure how the connection works, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought it was Bluetooth.
I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot of digging.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
But from what I've seen, I mean, the Google Glass is like, you turn your head and look at a restaurant, and it's like, here's a review. You know?
Yep.
It's not really...
very context aware.
Yeah.
But it's not really all that helpful. I mean, when I can really think of, off the top of my head, the Google Glass would have been great for, like, bacterial detection as a dishwasher. That would have been cool. You know, when you have this on where it's like, okay, I'm seeing how much contaminant is on these dishes still. I know, weird.
I just had a Wall-E moment.
Yeah, I kind of figured when I saw your face. And, you know, when it's... so you can actually increase and edit the sanitation of the dishwashing machine, or you start to when you're like, we need to replace something.
I think the Google Glass, and kind of just kind of hit me too after your statement of expanding its opportunity. What if you could connect it to your car and then you had a heads-up display with the Google Glass while you're looking at the road? What if you...
Dashboard manufacturers be really mad at you.
Well, BMW does it. Corvette has had it for years.
Oh, I saw an old one of those.
There's today. A lot of cars that put a heads-up display on the windshield. It's got a screen embedded in the dash in reverse. And when it lights up, you see the reflection of the windshield. You get an on-screen display. But what if Google Glass had it where it was right there in your eye? You could just easily see your speed, your whatever.
Talk about distracted driving.
Not really. It's all factors of the of driving. It's not like you're reading your text message right there in front of you, which you shouldn't be doing. although it is hands-free, so that begs the question.
What we're saying,
which is why more and more places are moving to make Google Glass illegal while driving.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if it would have been more, I don't know, open source or open compatible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just came up with two different things right off the bat here.
Yeah.
You know, if it was more open to what would be more practical other than getting a review or the star or score of a restaurant.
Yep.
You know.
That and the fact that it was, $1,500 to buy it off the shelf. It's like, geez, guys.
Well, but in slight defense of that price tag, Google Glass has never actually been released. The $1,500 to buy Google Glass, they were the Google Glass Explorer model. They were for developers. They were a development platform. They weren't, well, officially, they weren't intended to actually be
on the market.
On the market. They weren't on the market. You had to apply. They were in limited release because they were designed for people to have them to start writing programs for.
Yeah, and it didn't take off, apparently.
You know, there were a few rude people that kind of ruined it for everyone.
So, I'm waiting for...
We've talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting for a device like Google Glass that is standalone. That is your cell phone. That is your whatever that you don't have. It's no longer tethered to anything. And, I mean, the concept is... Obviously, we have it now, and I'm not the first person to think about, well, what if this was its own device? You know, you wait a few years, start seeing something like that. That could be really big.
We have the technology for all of it except how to power it.
Yep.
That's what we're waiting for. We can make processors small enough to fit in the armband of glasses. We can make screens small enough to fit in front of your eye. Google Glass has most of it now. The problem is battery technology hasn't evolved fast enough to keep up with the demands for power.
Yep.
You know, to make it fully, completely self-contained, you will get, you know, 15-minute battery life.
Okay. Yeah,
exactly.
I was supposed to say, you can charge it as the phone, but when it's 15% yeah. battery life.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, Brad and I have been researching drones and quadcopters and whatnot, and I don't know if you've looked at any of the battery systems for them, Brad, but
sure.
They're pretty big batteries, depending on mm-hmm. how much wattage and how much power, how many cells in parallel there are, all that kind of stuff. But most people that have quadcopters and drones are only getting 10 to 15 minutes of flight time on a charge. Now, yep. Some of the really, really big ones with multiple batteries, I've seen like a record holder at 2+, maybe 3 hours of constant flight time. But it's like an 8-foot wide drone that's got a ton of batteries on it. But, I mean, and those batteries, you're talking batteries that are, what, 2 by 6 by... you know, maybe another inch in size. They're
yeah.
big batteries, and they're only getting, you know, 10 minutes of flight time with drones that are, you know, we're not talking high voltage or high, you know, really high power demand, but enough.
Yep. We're waiting on battery technology to take that next leap.
I'm sitting here, and as we're talking about the Google Glass battery, and I just had the funniest idea. What if we connected the battery to, like, somehow as a, was it odometer or the one, it counts your steps?
Pedometer?
A pedometer, where if you want your phone calls and stuff like that.
Walk it off.
You've got to be exercising.
Must accrue 1,500 steps to place this call.
Because you have to, like, jog as some kind of, like,
windmill device.
So now you're winded on the phone because you've just been jogging and you're trying to build up power.
You imagine that. Just people like, yeah, send those fax reports. You just anyway. Have a whole bunch of, like, really in shape business people. Oh, God.
And with that one.
Yep.
Well, continuing on our Microsoft front, a UK man was arrested at the age of 18 in relation to the DDoS attacks on both Microsoft and Sony servers during the Christmas holiday season, or day, actually.
Okay.
This was a joint operation by the Cyber Crimes Unit and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, also more commonly known as the FBI. A representative for the Cyber Crimes Unit stated that we will still be working closely with the FBI, and it is only... the investigation is still in early stages, and we will continuing, you know, further steps. So they are, it's nice to see that these things are being handled.
But these attacks are not untraceable?
These attacks aren't going unpunished.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these people caused major, or this person, it was a major interruption, disrupted business, disrupted people's vacation time, you know. Granted, it's video games, but still.
It's not just video games. It's, you know, people getting pretty much anything that needs to be updated with Microsoft or Sony technology. And when their servers are down due to these attacks, everything not that's tied to these things, not just games, is affected. Now, when you want to get your tablet up and running, then you can't do that.
Be careful there, because Microsoft gaming servers are not the same as Microsoft operating tablet servers, or not the Sony PlayStation servers are not the same servers that Sony Pictures, the film group, are on. They're totally separate entities, separate networks, separate organizations.
It did not say gaming servers specifically.
Okay. Well, so the article was not specific, but they have a suspect in custody, rumored to be a part
in relation to the DDoS attacks. DDoS attacks. He's also faced with another charge of willingly, what's the word for, like, misleading police? Like withholding information or something like that?
Yeah, withholding information.
Yeah. So he's dealing with allegations of being connected with DDoS attacks and withholding vital information from authorities. So, all right, have fun.
You know, it's probably unlucky for him, actually, that he lives in the UK, because they have fewer rights and the higher-up authorities have a lot more leniency as far as making your life miserable. So he's in for a very unpleasant ride.
Yep. Hopefully it's one step closer to reducing DDoS attacks globally.
People will always try to find a way to make money, even if it's hacking movies, games, whatever.
Yeah, but DDoS attacks aren't, there's no money to be made there. You're and just then there's always companies people, from making their own.
And then there's always people getting their jollies on by screwing other people's days.
And if we can hold them accountable, the world will be a better place. Brad, back to you.
I'm actually going to go a little off reservation on this one. We did not do this in the rundown. Oh, so this one's just in. A new law in Illinois allows school districts to demand students' Facebook passwords.
Wait, what?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Why? So,
well, this is, it appears to be one of those cases of unintended consequences. The law was originally designed to help combat cyberbullying, give the schools more weapons in their arsenal, so to speak, to allow them to fight cyberbullying. But one of the unintended consequences is parents have already been receiving letters requiring them to give up parents have been receiving letters requiring them to give up their children's Facebook and social media passwords. And for them to say no is now a violation of the law.
So you go in with your kid and you delete their Facebook page and you reply, there's no social media passwords to provide.
And now you're destroying evidence.
You can't destroy evidence if there's no crime against anybody.
No.
Just sorry, those accounts have been closed.
Yeah. Dude, the first letter I get, if that's the case, that's exactly what I'm doing, too. Sorry. Account is no longer active.
If I need to talk to someone, I'll call them.
That's right.
So link will be in the show notes. Definitely weigh in on this one. Comment on our Facebook page. I want to get some feedback on this one going.
We will not ask you for your password.
Or will we?
Yeah, please reply on our Facebook page. Post your Facebook password.
Email.
That's the question, though. If you were, obviously your boys are homeschooled But if they were going to public school, mm-hmm. and you got a letter from the school saying you must provide your son's Facebook passwords, to not do so, your children will be expelled or you would face criminal charges, whatever. What do you do? Do you provide that information? Do you delete the account? Do you try to seek any sort of legal action to retain that information? Yeah, definitely interested in what people have to say on that.
I'm thinking, how is this
on
not
Facebook?
How is this not like an invasion of privacy thing?
That's the counter aspect.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the stance that, you would take.
I think
it's
a very disturbing overreach.
Well, and my concern is, you say it's an overreach, but if schools are sending out letters demanding that information, then it must not have been that much of an overreach, but the fact that it was intentionally written to potentially allow that, but vague enough for it to get passed.
Why does this feel like the same thing if politicians were using a loophole in like a vague law?
But my point is,
it's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. My point is, it sounds like it was intentionally written vaguely so that they would have this option.
Mm.
If they're already sending letters out, then this was kind of a planned deal in my mind.
Well, I'll definitely keep tuned to this one and bring updates. Hopefully this one will get a legal challenge and be overturned.
There we go. Class action. Jumping over to... There. What's that?
I see what you did there.
Exactly. Well, we've touched on a little bit of British news. Now let's jump to Canada news. Retail giant Target.
What are they all about?
They're all about to back out of Canada. Target is going to close all 133 of their Canada stores. They have received their initial court approval to liquidate their assets. Company executives had found that Target may not be profitable until 2021 in Canada. This was obviously a difficult decision for Target, not to mention financially, but it also causes 17,600 employees to become jobless.
Ouch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Target expanded into Canada in 2013, but was plagued with problems ever since. They couldn't keep up with consumer demand. Consumers complained about high prices. And with their initial negative perception, they were unable to turn around that stigma. Even the holiday season did not generate enough revenue to boost Canada Target. Per the CEO, simply put, we were losing money every day.
So, that's sad. I have had the opportunity to shop at a Target store in Canada, and I can't say the experience was any different. I didn't think the prices were that much more expensive. I didn't think,
the article.
I didn't notice any problems.
The article does touch base on stores like Target and having to be in competition with internet retailers like Amazon and whatnot from a price standpoint as well. But if you come into you open up a new market for yourself and then you're not able to keep up with what that market wants from you, you're just setting yourself up for failure, and that's what Target did.
Aren't you forgetting like the first law of economics, supply and demand?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah. But I think the call on internet retailers, though, is a little bit of a diversion here. I mean, they don't have to compete with internet retailers in Canada any more or less than any new stores in the U.S. do.
True, but I think in U.S., since they only went into Canada in 2013, stores like Amazon and whatnot have already been a staple there. Sure. Whereas in the United States, Target's been around a lot longer than Amazon and is kind of ingrained in the heads of instant gratification, and they've got everything for the most part.
Oh, yeah. We have a Target that's, down the street.
Yeah, I mean, it's not half a mile away.
It's when we either order it and it'll be there in a week or two, or we can just go there.
Yeah. But I think it may be, and obviously it's not like Canada didn't have retailers prior to 2013, but when they try to step into a market they weren't in before, and then
there's
they
no
can't,
brand recognition.
There's no brand recognition. Yeah, exactly that. And when people start coming in, they can't find what they need because they're out of it from a quantity standpoint. You're going to only, you know, dig yourself a deeper grave.
Now, what year did they...
2013 is when they entered Canada.
Now, that's actually what I think happened wrong there. They entered Canada too quickly, too quickly?
Probably.
They didn't allow themselves to build a stable
network. Yeah, I mean, 133 stores in 2 years. I mean, that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they're like, okay, we're going to get one here, then another one here,
yeah,
and another one here, and another one here, and two here, and so on and so forth, they may have been able to sustain themselves more efficiently rather than just
shotgun the entire country.
Toss the dice and go, we don't have a network to transport this stuff. What are we doing?
Yeah. It's plausible. It's a good point. Anyway, Target. Well, if you're used to shopping at Target in Canada,
we
get
are
used to not doing it anymore. Wait.
Well, what?
Well, go ahead.
Okay, then.
Take the reins.
It's a deep subject.
Continuing on, we have a bit of a controversy from the SOE, which would be Sony Online Entertainment, of the game H1Z1. They were thinking of the swine flu.
Yeah.
Or something like that. this is an open world survival.
It's a sick game.
Yeah. Open world zombie survival game where the president of the company, or that branch, went in with an interview stating that you would not be able to buy weapons and ammunition directly. As in, you would not be able to create your character and straight out equip him with an assault rifle and 3 packs of ammo. Unfortunately, some people did not read. Apparently, they did the TLDR version of what was going on. And, well, multiple articles on the game stated that, yes, you can get weapons and ammunition, food and water from supply drops. These supply drops are able to be in-app purchased in and is a free-for-all drop-in via airdrop within the game.
So essentially one player can pay for an airdrop. It doesn't guarantee what's in that airdrop, and the first one to get there can acquire those items.
And people were up in arms saying that, oh, look, I'm getting ammo and gun or weaponry. And when the president said that you couldn't, but when he said you can't do it directly, you know, it wasn't a sure thing that you're going to get weaponry and, you know, those kind of things in a supply drop. It's randomized, and people were up in arms because they just didn't read and didn't listen. So it's a case of ignorance on some people's parts.
So it's not that it's unattainable. It's that it's not a store structure where you can pick exactly what you want. It's random.
Yes. You can't just say, oh, I want this, this, and this, and this package, and you may not get it. It's a free-for-all.
Yeah, that's the biggest downside for me is that if all three of us are playing this game and I spend $20 for in-game cash or whatever,
I think it's like a $5 per drop.
Okay, so I pay $5 to get an airdrop and it drops over by Brad. I've just spent $5 and I didn't get anything from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get my, gratitude, undying affection.
Undying, well, you might be dying if you take my airdrop.
Well, that is now a question of possibility. If you're the only one to get it, you know, what's to stop one guy who has disposable income to buy 7-10 airdrops, and he's kitted out to the max and just wrecking the server.
So maybe you make the airdrop locked to the person that buys it, but they can only buy one a week or two a month or something like that, so that one person can't get overpowered with food or weapons or ammo or armor versus anybody else in the server. But that way their investment benefits them. Because right now the way it sounds like it's set up is one person investment can benefit whoever gets there first.
It's a Hunger Games, actually. Yep,
pretty much. Only one person's paying it.
Yeah, you're basically tossing in a package. It is. Tossing in a package of supplies, and he who's got the better skills to...
Or closer proximity, or whatever.
Yeah, who lucks out, pretty much, gets to get in.
Yeah, that's sketchy in my mind.
And
sounds like there's better ways it could have been done.
Apparently there was another event where the streamers had earlier versions of the game and the care packages were dropped somewhat close to them, you know, to incentivize purchase of more packages by other people.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I played Rust and there would be in-game airdrops that no one paid for. It was just part of the game. It was once or twice a day. I think it was once a day at high noon. And first one to get there got it, but no one had to pay for it.
Yeah.
Nobody was out for someone else's benefit. So, that's...
I like that system.
I do too. I mean, why penalize the guy that's contributing to the success of the game by paying money that can't get what he's paying for? I mean... Why would I do it then if I don't get it back?
They tried to pass that off as, look, you're not buying something for your directly benefit. You're buying something for everyone in the server.
Screw that.
You're giving a gift, basically, is what they tried to pass off
as. Yeah, screw that. I'm not playing that game.
And so
I'm definitely not going to spend any money on it.
It's funny. They say it's a free-to-play game, but I think it's like a $20 charge to actually buy the game to play it. Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, that's not free to play then. That's a $20 game.
And do
with in-game transactions.
I don't think we need another zombie game. We have, Dying Light coming out. And there's State of Decay. I played like an early version of that. And it's not that bad. But it's soon to be released. So
there's a popular...
It's a rave review. It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. But it does leave room for polish, and it is because it's not a fully released game yet.
Sure. I have seen, there's a popular YouTuber out there, and he did a video actually specifically on these zombie games. Why are there so many? What's the point? Especially since a lot of them are not the greatest games regarding content or gameplay or combat or whatever. But he pretty much came out and said that the reason why they're popular is because... they're more or less stressful. They keep you on edge. They physically get your heart racing. If someone's attacking you, whether it's another player and you're trying to evade, or you know, you don't know what you're going to see when you come around a corner, it truly is an adrenaline rush of a game, even if the content is mediocre and the combat is subpar. The tension that the game can give you if you're into that style of gaming can be very real.
I'm actually kind of wanting to play Dead Light.
I don't know which
one that is. Dying Light, sorry. It's the same one you were talking about. He did a...
Oh, okay. It's kind of like a hybrid Assassin's Creed plus zombie thing.
First person, yeah.
Yeah, that one looks interesting. But yeah, check that one out if you're a zombie fan of the genre. And with that, we are right at our hour mark. I think we planned that. And it's almost like we planned that. Did we plan that?
Almost.
And we didn't really
plan that. No.
But yeah, let us know in feedback. Talk to us in the comments on Facebook and whatnot, especially on that Illinois law. That's pretty crazy. And let us know what you think of zombie video games. I'm curious to know about that. And if you shop at Target and you don't get to anymore... We're sorry. Go to Amazon. Use our link. And with that, we'll see you guys next week.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.